Anyway, thank you for coming this afternoon, and I will try to set the stage actually for our project a little bit, because this was one of those things where it's very much like Martin Luther King, although his scope was much bigger than ours, but it was like you have a dream and you want to see it happen, and that really is where we were coming from as the Mental Health Center, one of the dreams that we've had and one of the goals that we've had for as long as I can remember is to make sure that every single one of our consumers had primary care available to them, that they had access to primary care, that they could get to their primary care appointments, and that hopefully their primary care providers and their mental health team would be able to consult with each other. And we've had, over the last 20-some years, had various levels of success at doing that and tried multiple different models to come up with a way to make sure that behavioral health care and primary care was available to all of our consumers. And of course, in Colorado, that doesn't occur usually in the same place. Usually there's a community mental health center or a mental health setting of some sort. Primary care is done somewhere else, and often never the twain shall meet. I was fortunate enough early in my career that I actually worked in a infectious disease clinic that was partly funded by Ryan White grant funds, and so they had mental health care and HIV related care in the same place, and it was really kind of a beautiful model, and I loved doing that. And so as the medical director for MHCD, I really hope that one of these days what we see is that it will be that sort of fluid for all of our consumers, that they all have access to primary care and that they're getting it in a place where they feel comfortable getting it too. That's another piece for us. Mental Health Center of Denver, we're the mental health community mental health center for the city and county of Denver. We're pretty much the largest mental health center in Colorado, and we see upwards of 11,000 people per year. Some people come and go, other people come and stay for longer periods of time, and we have a full spectrum of care. And so we were really very excited a couple of years ago when this idea started to come together about, gee, what if we could actually bring primary care providers into our clinics, especially for our consumers that don't have access to care or they're not comfortable going other places for care, and they really sort of see the mental health center as their medical home, that they're with us a lot and they're comfortable with us, and we have a lot of various services for our consumers, a lot of case management, a sort of community treatment. We go out and see people where they are much of the time. We go out and get them and sometimes bring them in. And for years, we have often facilitated our consumers actually getting to primary care appointments. Our case managers would take people. They would sit in waiting rooms with them. They would sit in appointments with them. They would sit in ERs with them. And so that's been a value of ours for a very long time. So this was an exciting project for us to have the opportunity to try it the other way and actually bring primary care providers to our consumers where they are. They're seeing us, and if we can then combine their care together, gee, maybe we'll get better outcomes for their overall medical care, especially with scary statistics like people with serious mental illnesses are dying 25 years younger than age-matched cohorts. That's an appalling statistic for us, and I hope you guys in public healthcare, that's an appalling statistic for you, and we really have to think of different models of how we're going to address this. So our model was put together with Department of Family Medicine, which I don't think we have anybody here yet except for our primary care provider, and Colorado Access and the Mental Health Center of Denver, and we came up with this idea. We pitched it to the Colorado Health Foundation. They said, sure, we'll fund you. We're like, yay. So then it was like, okay, now how do we do this, and what are all of the steps that we go through? So just quickly, I'll kind of go through mine and then let the folks who are actually doing the work talk to you guys about that. I have no financial disclosure to make. Nobody pays me to speak on behalf of anything. And I would turn the money down if they did. Colorado Health Foundation, we want to acknowledge them. Is there anybody here from the Colorado Health Foundation? Okay. If there were, I just wanted to point them out because we're very grateful to them. So we had goals. One of our goals, as I explained, was to provide an integrated care model for our consumers in an urban mental health center. We wanted to be able to address the primary care issues for our community in what is, for many of our consumers, their medical home. They come and see us a lot, and they're not so comfortable going elsewhere sometimes. And then we also wanted to be able to work with our primary care partners in managing chronic illnesses, chronic medical illnesses, with some behavioral health care support. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this four-quadrant model, or if you can even read it on the slide, because no matter how big it looks here, it's really small when you get back there. But it is a model of looking at how do we integrate care for folks that have behavioral health issues and physical health issues. And it was designed partly by the National Council on Behavioral Health, Community Behavioral Health Care, looking at folks in quadrant one that perhaps have low physical health care needs, low behavioral health care needs, that might be easily taken care of in any primary care provider's office. And then quadrant two, folks with higher behavioral health care needs and perhaps lower primary health care needs, then that might be something that could be done in either outstationing primary behavioral health care providers into a primary care office or using some sort of consultation model. The folks we were really interested in were the folks that are in quadrant four that have high behavioral health care needs, and they also have high physical health care needs, and how can we really address all of that in a really integrated model for them. And that really was essentially the population that we wanted to target with this grant-funded project. I know you can't read this one, and you're not supposed to, because it is supposed to demonstrate just how confusing this whole area is when you start talking about integrated care. What is the definition of integrated care? Are any of you guys working in what you would consider an integrated care system now? A few people way in the back. Good. So get involved in the conversation, because your experience will be really important, I think, to talk about. But essentially, this is C.J. Peek's model of sort of the integrated care tree. And as you can see, it's all over the board. When people talk about integrated care, you have no clue what they're really talking about. So you really have to get down to the details of, well, what kind of a model is this? Is this a model where you have behavioral health care support in a primary care office? Or is it a model where you've got some sort of collaborative care or co-location? Or are you actually doing more care management, et cetera? And don't try to read it, please. It's just really to demonstrate that the definition there is really no definition yet of integrated care that I think applies across the board throughout the United States. So it is something that is very much in development right now. It's kind of this is one of those places where you can create pretty much what you want to fit with your model, your system of care that you have, but trying to look at what are some of the basic pieces of providing integrated care in a community mental health center is what we want to try to describe to you guys today. So why did we think this was a good idea? Well, partly it's because at Mental Health Center of Denver, we really have for 20 years been working with people with serious and persistent mental illness, so we think we're pretty good at that. We use a very strengths-based, recovery-oriented model where we really focus on, well, what can people do as opposed to what they can't do? And then for things that they can't do, really trying to provide whatever supports they need to make that a strength for them to really overcome some of those challenges. For years, we've monitored already the medical care of our patients, whether we were actually providing it or not. We've always monitored what we were doing to them with our psychiatric meds, even back when we weren't doing too much to them with our psychiatric meds. But now we have more, you know, serious issues around cardiometabolic syndromes. But we have been at least monitoring for those 20 years. We've always gotten labs on our patient. We've always reviewed those labs. If there was something out of whack, then we'd refer them to primary care, and we were very active about doing that. We've been tracking cardiometabolic indicators since the guideline recommendations came out in 2004, and we've always considered primary care for our patients as significant for them as their behavioral health care needs. So one of the things we, just as an overview that we tried to do with this was figure out how to do the clinical model, what was the care model that we're going to implement in our clinics around both, you know, sort of minor acute care issues, but also mostly around preventive care and then chronic illness management with providing behavioral health care support too. This is one of our flyers that we've been putting out for our consumers so that if they didn't have a primary care provider, they knew how to get in touch with their case manager and get that referral started so they could actually be seen by our primary care provider, Dr. Martin. Thank goodness somebody has some artistic talent, because I don't. This is just a quick slide about in terms of how many. We actually have two primary care projects right now. We have one funded by the Colorado Health Foundation, which we're talking about today. We also have an integrated primary care project that's funded by SAMHSA. in one of the large primary behavioral health care integration pieces that they do, and that's our IPCW grant. And then we also have a integrated nurse practitioner that happens to work for us who has been a psychiatric nurse for many years, and then she went back to school, got her prescriptive authority and advanced practice in nursing in primary care, and she went off to Kaiser for a while to really kind of hone up on that, and then she came back to us, and so we have an integrated care provider, which is really very exciting, and she's been also helping us out with this model. To date, we've in our PRICARE project, which is the one we're talking about today, we've had 279 referrals. In our SAMHSA grant, we've had 176 referrals. And with Denise Hozier, our integrated nurse provider, we've had 56 referrals. And referrals doesn't necessarily equal that they were seen, although most of these people have been seen. Sometimes a referral would happen for our primary care provider and the consumer actually wouldn't follow up and for whatever reasons didn't actually make that appointment, but we're bugging them about it. And we nag our consumers pretty regularly about their medical care. So financial, yeah, how do you pay for this? That it's really easy to pay for when you have a grant. When the grant goes away, how do you pay for it? That's, I think, the debate for all of us and who are doing this kind of work. One thing I would say, as having been the medical director through this process, is don't bring two different grant-funded programs on at the same time trying to do the same thing, because it gets very confusing for your staff. And so we've had some challenges around that the rest of our team will talk to you guys about today. All right, and now Dr. Wesley Williams, he is our quality systems manager, and he will talk to you about trying to provide a primary care model within a mental health center in terms of the electronic health record when you don't have one that already does those two things.
Hi there, thanks. So my name's Wes Williams, and I'm the Quality Systems Analysis Manager at MHCD, which means that I sort of project manage the changes to the electronic medical record and any other sort of associated systems level changes that we need to put in place. I'm not, however, a doctor of computer science or anything. I initially was trained as a psychologist, worked as a psychologist in community mental health for maybe 5 years before transitioning into sort of health information technology. And I have nothing to disclose. So as Dr. Clark mentioned, we are the Community Mental Health Center serving a private nonprofit serving the city and county of Denver. We have roughly 11,000 active consumers that we see on any given year. And those are spread out in a number of different clinics, outpatient clinics, residences, school-based and community-based providers throughout the agency. So what that means from a health IT perspective, right, is that we have maybe 500 different clinical users at any time with, although we don't see that kind of volume on a day-to-day basis, we have that many sort of active users that we want to have a record available for. So today we're going to talk about how this project integrated with the electronic health record and how clinical care was found to be enhanced by the integrated record. Also talk about some of the obstacles to the successful integration and talk about implications for how you might structure an electronic health record going forward for projects such as this. Dr. Clark already talked a bit about the PRICARE project, so I just want to push ahead to talk a little bit more about our electronic health record instead. So we use NetSmart Technologies CMHC MIS, which is a flexible Unix-based electronic health record that was designed for behavioral health care. Right? And it's designed as a internet or intranet-based sort of web form. People access the application through a Internet Explorer browser. And instead of having NetSmart provide a sort of, this is the solution that you will use for behavioral healthcare, what they did instead was provide us with a very sort of flexible platform to which we could make changes, and it comes with an application programming interface so that we can develop custom modules as we see fit. I think what they found in the behavioral health arena was that there were a number of different requirements at the state and local level that different agencies needed to meet, and they weren't able to provide a sort of one-size-fits-all solution, so they instead gave us a nice little toolbox so that we could adapt it ourselves. So we implemented this EHR back in 2003, and we currently have a fairly robust implementation. So we have 350 regular clinical users and another 150 or so sort of student volunteer temp worker types who access the system. We have 225 concurrent licenses, so that's the kind of volume we expect to see on any given moment in the system. And I run the systems analysis department, which consists of sort of 2.5 FTE of development staff at this point. So we provide business analysis and software development for the health record. The timeline for this project was that I sat down with Drs. Clark and Connery back in March of 2009 to look at what the needs of the primary care record within our behavioral health care record would be, right? What would a primary care physician need in terms of notes and documentation? And could we meet those requirements within our system? We then spent the next couple months working up models and figuring out what we could do to meet that. And by July, we then had sort of a working model that we were able to present to Dr. Martin when she came on board with the project. So then I worked together with Dr. Martin to come up with modifications of that initial spec so that we could actually go live with this. And by October of 2009, we had our sort of go live date, including a custom referral process to go along with the documentation process. We then followed the project for a couple more months, and in December implemented a change where we added a sort of a dictation component to that to support longer evaluations. What we ended up doing in terms of customizing the record was sort of throwing all the tools we had available at it. So one was sort of pulling forward prior history, right? In the behavioral healthcare documentation world, typically the services that are documented are, I guess, restricted to what we learn in the session that we're providing here. Whereas in the physical health world, right, if you gain information about sort of your medical history or social history, you want that on every note where you're providing a full service. So what we did instead here was we pulled forward that information from note to the last. We set up a pointer in the system and pointed towards the previous notes data record and just pulled those into the current note for sort of so they could be added to as session by session. We also imported as much data as we could from the MIS directly, current medications, allergies, and vitals that were taken right before each visit by the nursing staff. Finally, we had to structure the diagnostic record differently for the primary care. For behavioral care, right, we have a sort of a diagnostic record that's relatively static with time. We require the psychiatrist to update the diagnosis annually, right, and then any other time there's a significant change, but it's definitely not re-diagnosed per session, or at least re-altered per session. With primary care, however, we have both those sort of chronic primary care conditions such as diabetes that we would expect to be fairly static over time, but we also have sort of acute conditions that the provider might be treating, and we wanted to have a record that was flexible with that. So each time a session occurred, we would have the diagnosis from the previous session pull forward, and then they could pick from either a super bill choice to add a new diagnosis or select against the entire ICD-9 CM diagnostic set, and then they could have plenty of diagnoses per session, right, as many as they needed to describe the complexity of our folks. Now, this is really just to give you a sense of the complexity of the workflow that we had to figure out in bringing in a whole new system. Here, this is our appointment workflow in terms of who would get, you know, how we would set up, schedule, and then reconcile an appointment as it occurs. I think the take-home message here in terms of this slide, right, is that you know, there's an added level of complexity when you bring in an entire another system, you know, in this case the physical health system that didn't exist within our sort of mental health scheduling process, that had sort of a nice cleaner arrow flow that looks something a little closer to this, right? So, like I mentioned, we also put together a customized referral process where we want to make sure that consumers referred to the program met the eligibility requirements. And of course, we designed this, and 4 months later, as Dr. Clark mentioned, we threw in another completely different requirement, grant-funded program that we needed to modify that referral process for. But it was totally fine, right? We did have a, we also added a new section to our electronic health record chart for primary medical care, so people could access those notes separately from the behavioral health notes. And then we, I think most importantly in terms of the coordination of care, we gave the treating psychiatrist notification anytime there was a PCP visit, right? So the consumer comes in for a primary care session and they actually are pushed out onto their sort of staff to-do list, given a notification there has been a primary care visit, would you like to review the record? And right from there they can see the chart notes from that primary care session. And so here's the sort of complicated referral workflow that we put in, just to show you that you know, we work through these. In general, what we have here is that we have the you know, the orange forms are actual sort of computer programming, and then the white is just sort of actual processes, and the blue is sort of decision point stuff. Looking over the project as a whole, I would say that there were a number of really successful elements to it. The main one is that because we adapted the primary care record into the behavioral health system that we currently had in place, and because it's a web-based system, what that meant was that everyone across the agency, those 350 regular users and as well as the you know, volunteers and temporary staff who are assigned to a treatment team, all of those people can view the chart notes. And in addition, we were able to push that information out to the psychiatrist, which meant that we had a really sort of good technical support for, you know, integrated review of records. So that was probably the best, most successful element of this. And I, you know, I think, you know, in contrast with the other project that we ran where we did not have that kind of integration, I think that's what makes this PRICARE piece definitely successful. We also were able to meet the initial specifications, everything that the two medical directors asked for in their March meeting was able to be delivered. So we did have a good sense initially of what we would be able to provide, and you know, it seemed on paper like a good fit for things, and we were also able to provide Dr. Martin with some additional customizations you know, that she wanted before we went live with the program. Finally, I think the, you know, by putting the diagnoses in a session by session record, we're able to have a finer degree of analysis in terms of being able to have a data set where we could actually look at sort of exactly what treatment is provided over time. There were, however, some limitations to the whole bit. The biggest one is that we didn't end up integrating the billing in with the electronic health record. And so the billing is done on a sort of a paper super bill that gets sent in off to the university physicians and provides additional work for the provider. And then there's a risk of disparity between the documentation that's being written in the electronic record and the billing itself, you know, and I think one of the reasons that we ended up with the solution is that we decided that ahead of time, right, ahead of pulling in the, you know, the systems analysis folks to say what we could do or couldn't do. And then I think the other piece is more sort of primary care specific, and that is that, you know, because this is built out of a behavioral health record, it doesn't have the sort of primary care templating and support for supporting prompts for primary care specific work. It's a more of a generic primary care note rather than tailored on a per visit basis. Right? And what that means is that the documentation takes longer to complete, and that you know, compliance in terms of sort of billing and sort of as well as good practice isn't built into the system in the way that we try to do that with our behavioral health notes. So the implications here are that, you know, I think we can achieve real benefits right now by integrating physical health and behavioral health stuff into an electronic health record, right? And that if you're willing to accept some of the compromises that you need to make, your treatment teams can realize, you know, actual benefits with the technology as it is today. That being said, you know, I think the health record's a fairly large portion of, it's not the clinical care itself, and it's not the care providers or the consumers, but it's part of the day-to-day operations, and it's sort of a big part. And you know, my goal as systems analysis manager is to try to reduce the amount of impact that the health record has, right, on the care, and give people more time to deliver the care. And you know, I think sometimes getting involved even earlier in the project, you know, instead of 6 months before our sort of go live date, but you know, maybe more like a year before, and planning at the initial stages when everything is on the table would have been better. Finally, I guess, you know, if I had to do it again, I would say it might be worthwhile looking at finding a software package where we could just use the physical health add-on, you know, for primary care providers, and Dr. Martin would enter her notes in the primary care module, and we would work more on the integrating the two separate pre-purchase systems rather than building a separate primary care module right from scratch. Thank you. So next we have Dr. Martin herself to tell what it was like.
So my name is Sarah Martin. I'm a family physician and an assistant professor at the University of Colorado, the Department of Family Medicine, and I am the primary care provider on the PriCare project. So I'm hoping in this section I can give you an idea, sort of the nuts and bolts of our primary care clinic at MUCD for PriCare, and kind of how it's set up and what some of the challenges are that we have seen, and also some of the really good benefits that we're seeing to this kind of a model. So I have no relationships to disclose. So our primary care staff for this PriCare project is one family physician, one nurse, and administrative support from the MHCD staff. And I would say, I think one of the things that we underestimated at the beginning was really the amount of administrative support from the MHCD staff that we would need for scheduling and follow-ups and those kinds of things. We have two clinics at two MHCD locations here in Denver. We have one exam room each at the two sites. In each exam room, we have a sink, an exam table, a laptop and computer desk, and other standard equipment and supplies, ophthalmoscope and thermometer and those kinds of things. So our patient population, of course, is coming from MHCD, and we're focused primarily on Medicare and Medicaid, and we have some uninsured patients that have stayed with us from when we were initially enrolling some uninsured at the beginning of the project. And we're doing primarily outpatient primary care services. So our enrollment, I think our numbers are a little bit different. I don't know if because mine are more recent than Cheryl's, but altogether we've had, we have about 196 ongoing different patients receiving services at the clinic, and we actually have now about 570 individual patient visits that we've had over the course of the project since last October, a year ago. And so the mental health diagnoses of the patients that we're seeing are, for their primary diagnosis, about 47% schizophrenia, 25% bipolar disorders, 11% major depression, and about 7% mood disorder, and about 62% of the patient population has substance use issues. So we're doing primarily ambulatory adult medicine. So we are seeing a lot of chronic diseases that we're doing management for: hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, obesity, asthma, COPD issues, and hypothyroidism. We are doing preventive services, well woman care, well adult checks, screenings for things like hyperlipidemia, high cholesterol, things like that, diabetes. And we have been successful in helping people follow through on referrals for colonoscopy and mammogram, which I think is wonderful in this patient population. We actually don't see very many acute care visits. So in this population, people really don't come in because they have a sore throat or a stuffy nose or something like that. I think typically they access healthcare when things are serious. Or when they've been told they really need to have something addressed by someone else who's providing care for them. So that was kind of a surprise to me. I thought we would be doing a lot of rapid strips and really that would be a useful thing for us to provide. But actually at this point, the way people are accessing these services, that's not really what they're looking for. And we do a lot of patient education and counseling at our visits, particularly because we're talking about diabetes and high blood pressure and those kinds of things. So the consumers at MHCD have really, I feel, responded well to this, certainly from my perspective when they come to see me. This location is familiar to them, and they comment often that they feel more comfortable coming to a visit at these locations, that it's more convenient for them. Oftentimes they're receiving other services at MHCD and they may be able to do things on the same day. In fact, they often do that. And it's been very easy for me to establish a relationship with a population that might otherwise have a lot of barriers to communicating with me what some of their issues are, because they are in an environment that's familiar to them. And I feel that they are more comfortable in giving me information in that environment. So one of the things that we've learned is that the case managers are playing a really key role in this process. They see the consumers regularly. They often come to the visits with the consumers. They frequently talk to me before a patient has a visit, if there are issues that I should know about beforehand or that might help me interact with that person. And they help with follow-up as well, making sure that people follow through on the things that we've decided to do and that they come for follow-up appointments. So that support and collaboration is great. The proximity and opportunity for communication is really facilitated by providing services in this environment. The case managers are around and available. They can stop by if they want to follow up about a consumer or they have a question about something. Same for myself. If I have a concern or I feel that I should inform their psychiatrist or other provider about things that are going on with this patient, we can very easily do that with email, phone call, or just see them in person in these environments. We're able to individualize patient medical needs and follow-up, which I think is very important. We have a lot of information about these individuals and can plan accordingly. And we're able, because we do have a fairly small patient population, we can be very flexible in our scheduling and therefore can be more responsive to consumer needs and individual situations. So challenges have been administrative support needs and staffing, physical space and equipment, and as Dr. Williams pointed out, the electronic medical record issue was a very big challenge, a huge job, and he did a great job making something work for us so that we could go ahead and get started with the primary care activities. So compliance is kind of an issue. You mentioned billing, and for us in primary care, billing and coding is a really big deal. So we have requirements that we have to meet for documentation for Medicare and Medicaid and those kinds of things, and so that's why it's a big deal to us. And so making sure that we have something in place where we can meet those standards has been a challenge. So assessing the appropriate scope of practice, we can't do everything for everyone in this environment where we are. We don't have after hours coverage or weekend coverage. It's important for patients to understand that. Making sure we have the right complete patient medical information and history for individuals sometimes is a challenge because individuals don't know their complete history sometimes or things that might be relevant to what we're planning to do. And then supportive services, x-ray, mammogram, additional procedures, and specialty care, of course, we don't have on site, so we need to make connections for that. We have had some really good success with local providers in the community helping us with neurology and getting our patients in for colonoscopies and that kind of thing, which we've really appreciated. So I wanted to give some examples of patients that I've seen in this project recently, and I'm hoping I chose these because I think that they demonstrate some of the things that we're able to accomplish doing this in this environment. So one thing that we're able to do is accommodate individual needs. So I saw a gentleman, a 50-year-old male. He has a history of disorganized schizophrenia and panic disorder with agoraphobia. Pretty severe symptoms. He sees his psychiatrist, but with difficulty. He's been severely hypertensive for a period of months, and he just hasn't been able to access care at an outside location. Just for him, the barriers to doing that were just not surmountable. He did try to do it at an outside clinic recently, really did not do well, decompensated in the lobby, became very upset. It was very traumatic for him, and he certainly had no interest in returning there. So by collaborating with the mental health providers and our PriCare staff, we were able to plan for this patient and how we could accommodate his needs at a primary care visit. We did it all by email. It was very easy, very quick. And he came in and had a visit, and he did great. And he was very pleased that he had a good visit. And that's really a good starting point for us, is to be able to provide that first contact where we can address an immediate need in a productive way where the patient feels successful with what they've accomplished. And then that really sets us up for being able to continue to provide care in the future. So a second example is collaboration and staff capacity building. I got a recent email from a new case manager who was at an MHCD location that was not one of the two sites where we have a primary care clinic. And he just emailed and said, I'm hoping to meet with you regarding this recently referred patient. He's got several very specific circumstances I think you'd like to know about before you meet with him and his sister, because his sister always comes to the visits. He says, I only need about 15 minutes of your time, either by phone or in person, but I'd love to come by and just talk to you. And I was really encouraged by this, because here's someone who's really recognizing the value of what we're doing, recognizing that it would be worthwhile for us to meet face-to-face and just kind of talk about what we're doing, and also recognizing that this might be valuable to that individual to have a conversation before he comes so that we can really accommodate his needs. So this third example talks about familiarity and continuity. This is a 37-year-old female with a history of uncontrolled diabetes, herpes simplex, and high blood pressure. And per her case manager, I was told that she refused to receive medical care for about 2.5 years. What would happen is she'd go to an appointment with a doctor, decide she didn't like him, wouldn't return, and then would go periodically to the emergency room when she really had something that needed to be addressed right away, or things that could have been routinely addressed in a primary care environment. So she was willing to try the PCP out at MHCD because it was at MHCD, and she was willing to do that more than once. So she came for a series of appointments. We addressed her more serious concerns, planned for follow-up, and I really liked what the case manager had to say about it, which was that this is what the case manager wrote. She said, regarding the patient, she was familiar with the clinic and staff, which created a safety for her that she otherwise did not have at independent hospitals or clinics. In addition, she received more informed care since I, as a case manager, was able to fully communicate and advocate for her with my colleagues who also knew her. So I was really glad to see that that recognition by the case manager of how we can work together to make this really successful. And then the last example I have is a 38-year-old female with a complex medical history. So 6 months ago, she was using the ER about 3 or 4 times per week. She had a history of aggressive behavior in the ER, which caused her some legal problems. She started coming to PriCare in July. She was on more than 20 medications. She had poor vitals and indicators. Her blood pressure, glucose, and labs were not very good for an untreated diabetic. And she's now seeing the PCP regularly. She's on appropriate medications. She's lost 18 pounds. Her blood glucose has dropped, has improved by 20%, and she's no longer using a walker. And significantly, she's had no ER visit for 45 days. So for this patient, that's a huge improvement. Now, there were other things going on. It's not just because she came to the doctor, and I'm such a great doctor. Her case manager at this time was working on housing issues and encouraging her to exercise and reinforcing messages that she was getting at her primary care visits about diet and exercise and things like that. But she's done fantastic, and she's really proud of her accomplishments, too. And I think this is a really good example of how we can have benefit for patients, but also benefits to the system, as she's no longer inappropriately using the ER. And so finally, just to summarize, we talked about reducing barriers to accessing care. We're able to provide consistent care and follow-up. We're working with a relatively small population, so we can manage them pretty intensively. We know what's going on. We see them around the clinic. The case managers are working with them very closely. And significantly, this has allowed us to keep a very flexible schedule. So our schedule changes a lot during the day, and that's really appropriate for this population and allows us to really be responsive. So we've all had a learning curve on this. The patients have, the staff have, the provider has. You know, what are primary care services? What are preventive services? How do we appropriately provide what people need in our tiered healthcare system? And that's pretty much it. I guess I'll do questions at the end. Thank you.
So our final speaker is Dr. Jean Demler from Heartland Network Social Research. And Jean has served as the external evaluator on the project. She's going to provide you with some data on the mental health provider perspective of implementation and talk a little bit about process implementation for this project.
I'd like to acknowledge my colleague, Dr. Krista Smith. Together, we have been the process evaluators for this project. And then we work with the funders, Colorado Access, Dr. Jeanette Westmonsky, and Rob Brenner. And I have nothing to disclose. So this is an innovative project, at least for us. We had no template to say this is how we're going to implement a primary care physician into the mental health center. So we saw then three important tasks for the process evaluation. One being we just want to document how to do this. And as you could see from Wes's slides there with the referral process, I mean, there were a lot of implementation steps in this we want to document. Hopefully other people might be doing this and we can learn together. And then we also wanted to use what we might learn along the way as a tool for improving, changing, making things work. And thirdly, we thought we might identify some of these challenges and then feed that back, see where we're going, see if we can really sustain and make a great model here. Now, as we've been suggesting, there are several different perspectives on how this is working, right? So, you talk with Wes. Well, he's involved with all the sort of nitty-gritty stuff, and it can get bogged down at times. And so we were saying, well, let's talk about all the different perspectives we have. So here, we've talked about the primary care, and you listened to Sarah, and you heard how excited and positive she is about it, but what about the folks that are on that front line? What about those case managers and clinicians who are at the beginning of that referral process that Wes talked about? We've got to get them not only involved, but really understanding and connecting with our primary care people. So we do two kinds of data collection. Krista and I both go to a lot of management meetings, probably everyone, and learn what management is thinking about this. But it's also important, then, we thought, to really talk with the frontline people. So we did a survey that we hope to do twice. Now, this is baseline data. We're saying, what are you thinking as case managers and clinicians at this point in time? Obviously, it's not the very beginning, but it's given them time to get a little familiar, and then we'll do the same survey in 2 years and see where we are. Hopefully, we've gotten more familiarity. People know what they're doing. We did the survey over the summertime, and to be honest, I just tried to get every case manager and clinician that works in 7 clinics that have the services of Sarah and her nurse. And here are the 7 clinics. The two that are bolded, Humboldt and Downing, are the clinics where Sarah and the nurse have their primary care clinic. We invited 217 people to respond to this survey. It's an online survey, and 143, or 66%, responded. There's a bias in the people who responded. I mean, we're going to get people who have some familiarity, right? Oftentimes, if you know nothing about something, you're just going to kill that email. So we do have a bias, but in one sense, it also gives us, you know, some sense of who's familiar. So if you look at this, we have a lot of folks, you know, 55% who said, well, I'm somewhat familiar with this. They've heard about it, someone's talked to them about it, or maybe they've referred somebody to Sarah. And then we had about 20% that said they were really quite familiar. So overall, it's like almost 75% of the folks said, yeah, I'm familiar with PRICARE. Now, one hypothesis is that the folks that are in those two clinics that you saw where there's co-located mental health and primary care, they're going to be more familiar. And in fact, that is the case. So you see the folks that are quite familiar more likely to be in either the Humboldt Clinic or the Downing Clinic where the nurse and primary care physician work. I have to tell you, to be really honest, this approaches statistical significance. It was like P was 0.06. So it's getting there. Now, there were implementation challenges, and one of those has really been talked about. And in a sense, it's a confounding experience that's happening at the same time, and that is implementing another primary care project at the same time. So some of our results, I think, were confounded by the fact that people, they knew there was some primary care going on, but they weren't always sure who was eligible for which program, and they just, you know, just complicated it. So I think it would have been cleaner, but not better for the clients if we'd had one program. Oh, that's what I was talking about. All right. When we fed some of that information back, that people did have some confusion, that they weren't always clear where they might be referring, the management team said, okay, we got to go and change this. We got to go do more communication with the case managers and clinicians and say, here's what to do, here's what we are doing as a primary care clinic. So they took our results and said, okay, let's take another stab at this, because we were learning something that was important for the future of the project. Now, as I said earlier, we probably have a bias that we have 61% of the folks that answered this survey actually had referred somebody. But what that allowed us to do then was to say, if you have referred somebody, did you experience any challenge in that referral process? Because we want to make sure that referral process is as easy and as just almost second nature to people, or they're not going to do it. They're going to get frustrated. So as you can see here, we had 61% said they'd referred, but then another 60% of those people said, yes, I did have a challenge in doing some referrals. One of the major challenges was they didn't realize how simple it really could be to refer. Wes has made it so simple. All they have to do is to go into their electronic health record and make a referral for primary care. They don't have to find out if this person is eligible for Medicaid or not, this person doesn't have any insurance or not. And so what we learned is they were thinking, oh, we have to know all this about eligibility before we can refer, because we're like referring to one program or the other. So in fact, this also helped us in terms of helping them know. The easiest thing is if you think and your client thinks they want this primary care, just say, we want primary care. And someone else in the organization will say, oh, this person goes here to primary care or to the other project. Other challenges, some people just weren't eligible for PRICARE, and so they just couldn't be referred. They couldn't get enrolled, I mean. And sometimes just the enrollment process itself was confusing. There was also a little bit of lack of clarity what the primary care services would provide. Would they have a mammogram, for instance, or would they have some more specialized service, which they don't, but we need to educate the mental health staff as to exactly what is able to be provided in this type of clinic. And then the fourth challenge is the challenge of co-payments. And this is new to mental health consumers, because at the mental health center, they don't have to pay every time they come, even if it's a small amount, even if it's $9. They don't have to. And we also know that our population doesn't often have this money. So there was some, it was just a barrier to sort of get through some of that. Could they come and not pay? Well, you know, we sort of had to decide if we could do that, if the grant could allow that. Listening to the folks on healthcare reform this week, though, when they're saying we're not going to have co-pays for any preventive kind of thing. So if you did some preventive stuff, if we can get that all in order, we won't have this barrier anymore. So as I said, we really tried to address some of the challenges. We went to the meetings and reviewed some of the data and talked with everybody and said what would work to change the process a bit. And then they did it really quickly. I mean, it's not like they said, oh, well, we'll do this next month. It was like, okay, who's going to be where? Where do we go to make this change? We had more meetings with the case managers, and we developed the referral process even more streamlined, in a more streamlined way than we had before. And then we really tried to keep up better communication between the PRICARE staff and our mental health folks. I mean, we just needed to educate more what primary care was doing. And in fact, I think some of that worked because people are communicating it. Now, it's not that we didn't believe Sarah, right? She says, oh, I'm talking to these people and sending these emails, whatever. But my task as an evaluator was to say, okay, so what does the other side say? Are they communicating? Do they think they're communicating with Sarah? And in fact, you know, over 50% said, yeah, I do. Just like she said, they stopped by her office. Hey, I had this client. What did you do? How are you thinking about it? What can I do? They were asking her questions, like, how can I help this process? They don't talk about telephone much. It was like, I don't know, 38% or something said they'd call her on the phone. They prefer face-to-face or email, it looks like. And a lot of email across the town. I mean, these are people that aren't all in the clinics where she's working. So I think they do their primary communication by email. And then the med review record. This, I think, is very important, looking at integration of services. I don't think we can have integrated services if we can't have the mental health folks and the primary care folks looking at the same record and being able to look at it when they want to look at it, immediately. It's not like, oh, next week, but having it really handy. And Wes's work allowed that, and people are, in fact, using it. We had almost 60 percent of the people said, yes, I have looked at that medical record for my client. Now, recognize this is still early in the process of this whole thing. So the hope is that when we do the survey again, we will have higher percentages here. This is baseline, these are baseline data. So I think it's great data for figuring we're just a year into it. And hopefully in, you know, 2 years we'll see they're talking on the phone, they're doing the review of the medical records all the time. That's our goal. So I really see us on a path of integration here. And I just talked about that a bit, so I'll just say one more thing, is that we asked a question about, have you changed the client treatment plans in any way? Is it, has the fact that your client been able to get medical care and you can talk to Sarah, you can email her, you can find out what's really going on, has that influenced how you as a mental health professional is, I don't know, behaving, working with the client? I meant to bring some copies of the survey, but something that says, here I as a case manager might do something different with my client because of their experience here. Now, it's so early, so just realize this is really early data, but it was interesting to me that people did say, yeah, I have changed some things. I've added the nutritional component to the plan, or diabetes control, or you can see food preparation. So I think, you know, this is where we really want to get to, where the treatment plan itself reflects an understanding of what we are as whole human beings and our mental and physical health care needs. So even though there were challenges and people had, you know, they really had to work hard at times to understand the referral process or where they were going with it, we had a lot of positive comments. So I didn't want to put them all up here, but I put one as an example. And these folks said, you know, it's just helped our consumers a lot, particularly those that didn't go elsewhere to get such care. And they've just been really compassionate. And I think we've seen that in the attitude of the PRICARE staff, but to have the mental health staff say that says that these perspectives are, in fact, somewhat congruent. And this woman, I had to put her up here because here's our nurse, Anastasia Cox. She couldn't come today, but I think it's important that you know this is a team. It's not just Sarah. So finally, we see this as a very complex process. This, and you could, I mean, I looked at Wes's referral stuff there. I mean, you can see this is not an easy thing to do. It's complex. It requires a lot of training of the mental health staff. I mean, it's not like, oh, we're going to do this tomorrow, and then everybody's ready to do it. They need to know, you know, what is integrated care? How do we recruit? How do we refer? So there's a lots of steps, and it's not, I just don't want people to say, oh, well, we're, you know, a year into it, and we still have problems. This is something that's going to take a while. And at the end point is where we say, oh, yeah, we've got it all together. We're in the process here. And then I would say that from both the perspective of the case managers and from PRICARE, the challenges are worth it. I mean, the clients seem to be benefiting at this point, at least from their ability to have the care. We don't have the outcome measures yet, but next year maybe we'll do that. Thanks. Oh, now Jeanette's going to sum up.
Well, thank you for your attention. I have just one last slide here, and if you get anything from the session today, here are 5 points for you if you're thinking about integrating primary care into behavioral health settings. The first is you need planning time. You really need to sit down with your team, with your primary care physician or provider, and come up with the process of how you're going to do this and what it's going to look like. And also plan for your medical record and what that's going to look like. Another thing that I think a lot of us didn't realize in the mental health setting was that our consumers and our providers don't know what primary care is. And so we've had to do a lot of education about what types of services are provided, how those services are provided, when to refer out to specialty medical services. And this is very new for the mental health setting. Another issue is the EMR, and I have to really underscore this. I was at another conference a few weeks ago where they were talking about integrated electronic medical records, and they focused on putting the mental health record into the primary care record. We're doing the opposite, and by doing that, it allows us to get around a lot of issues. Most of you know that mental health records are protected at a different way than primary care records. There's a lot more protection. Besides HIPAA, there's mental health statutes that vary from state to state. And by having this kind of a record, what we allow is for all our providers in the mental health center, including our primary care providers, to have access to the same level of information. Now, the consumers sign a consent form when they sign up for these services that allows this communication to happen. But now we have a medical record where any provider in our system can look at what's going on and understand the treatment plan and understand what's happening in real time almost when it comes to the record. That's something very new. However, developing the primary care components for the EMR is a very complicated process, and your agency or organization will have to think through that carefully. Also, you can't just place a primary care physician in a mental health center and with an exam room and a nurse and tell them to go forth and prosper. It really requires system redesign. You really have to think about how this is going to impact every aspect of the care delivery you have within your mental health center. And then finally, I think a really key point is process evaluation is really key for developing this model because it allows for a rapid quality improvement process to take place. You're collecting data by an outside person and then feeding that back into the system to make real-time change. And I think that's very important because this is a new model. A lot of the models on integration have been have revolved around depression in primary care. We have a literature of 15 years of depression treatment in primary care with care managers or behavioral health specialists. Nobody has published a lot yet in this area. I mean, there's one or two folks who are looking at this, but this is really a new a way of thinking about the medical home. And the final point I'll make is when you talk to mental health consumers, when you ask them who their doc is, they'll tell you it's their psychiatrist a lot of times. And this is the place where mental health consumers are going to go to get their primary care services. So thank you for your attention today, and we'll open it up to our panel here for any questions you may have. You know, we don't know what to expect right now because nobody has done this in terms of a mental or published it on how many patients per day you would typically see. We knew it was going to be a lot lower than what you would see in a typical primary care practice.
I was just thinking, given that I'm assuming, like in California's Medicaid population, most people don't have primary care.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to answer that. I think going into this, we probably didn't describe as well as we might have for you guys that the two different programs, so for the PriCare project, which we're talking about today, we were focused primarily on a population that has Medicaid. and then some that has Medicare. So what we discovered, I think, going into it is that probably some more people that had Medicaid in our population that already had primary care relationships established, a little bit more of those than we expected. And I know we adjusted sort of downwards in the grant proposal just to start with because we knew this was going to be taking a little bit more time than it might in a traditional primary care setting. So I think we anticipated a panel perhaps for Dr. Martin of about 800, you know, folks. And we're only 1 year into it, and we're still, you know, referring people in. So we didn't want to just sort of overwhelm our system by suddenly trying to punch out a whole bunch of patient visits when we wanted to make sure that we were getting it right in terms of the integration pieces with the medical record and with Dr. Martin and working in a completely different system. So we really hope there'll be a lot more patients that will be enrolling eventually. And our other grant-funded program is focusing primarily on folks who are indigent and who don't have primary care relationships for the most part. We expect those numbers to go up to about 800 or 900 too. We're not taking people away from their current primary care provider. If they have a good working primary care relationship, we're good with that. We continue to collaborate and work with those folks just as we always have, trying to make phone calls to their primary care providers, send, you know, encrypted safe mail so that we can use email if necessary. I suppose if we were all 16 and we were texting, that there would be no, this would be real time because, you know, they don't need to talk to each other on the phone. They just do it over texting. Sarah, you want to address that too?
So I can say by way of comparison, it would be pretty typical at a community health center for a provider like me to see 20 to 25 patients per day. That's pretty average these days. That takes a lot of administrative support, 3 exam rooms, and some other on-site things. And that's certainly something that can be worked up to. I think one of the very nice things about this pilot project was that we didn't actually have a daily number of visits that we had to do right off the bat. So we could really kind of see how things evolved and what kind of capacity we really would have. I think that the possibility of seeing many more patients is certainly there, but it depends. You know, as Wes was talking about, some difficulties with our documentation requirements in primary care that are different for the health record, staff support, and just physical space, numbers of exam rooms, not having a procedure room, those kinds of things. So I think it's something that can be worked up to, but it's just physically and starting out, we don't really have that now. A patient panel is not uncommon for a primary care provider to have a patient panel of 2,000 patients. And I can tell you, for me, it's wonderful to be in this environment where I really know the patients that I'm seeing. And so when a case manager does come by and say, hey, I want to ask you about so-and-so, or I want to tell you something about so-and-so, I usually know pretty much what's going on with that patient. And that's, for me, a luxury in this day and age. Some of these challenges that we're having are the same challenges that primary care doctors are having in other environments with EHR and documentation and billing and coding and, you know, what really are the resources that are needed to have an efficient system that can see a lot of patients. So it just takes time to develop those things.
Question there. This for you too. Who employs you, first of all? And second of all, have you guys done any modeling as to how much billing you'll have to do to support yourself? Because the grant plan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I suspect 370 or whatever probably will cut it, but I'd just be curious if you've modeled that, because that would be helpful.
So I'm actually employed by the University of Colorado, the Department of Family Medicine. And that's a good arrangement from that part of it. It's also allowed me to have access to some resources and support about primary care, which is good because I'm there by myself as a primary care doctor, and sometimes I feel like, you know, I have to represent all of primary care in this new environment, and sometimes that's really challenging. And as far as the financial model, that is something that we're very interested in as part of the grant to look at. Can this be sustaining, or is the cost savings for, you know, the patient I talked about who's not going to the ER every 3 to 4 days now, is that cost saving significant enough to justify what's otherwise not a financially viable model? So this is part of the reason for when we talked about enrollment and who was and wasn't eligible for PriCare. We did have to make some decisions early on, like certainly the need is highest in uninsured. But not only could we not meet their needs many times in terms of we couldn't provide medications, we couldn't provide x-rays, we couldn't provide home oxygen or all those other things because we weren't funded for that, it also wasn't helping us in this model look at that particular issue. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There is, and I should probably, the question was, is there a plan to look at patient outcomes? And there is a plan, I should let you maybe talk more about it, but it will be the purview of the mental health center evaluation. My job is really the process, but it's, I always want to know what's going on, so I think we need to work together sometimes.
Yeah, just to add to that, we are looking across both grant programs, looking at clinical indicators, looking at some of the disease management indicators around blood pressure, hemoglobin A1C, those sorts of things, patient satisfaction. So we are measuring. We have a whole host of clinical measures we'll be collecting in our population.
Any qualitative, like focus groups, actually talking to those patients about their experiences both on both sides of, with the primary care and
mental
health
threat?
I'd like to do that.
Yes, we're looking into doing that. Any other questions?
I was impressed to see that the mental health center itself has both services and housing. That's the residences. You've got housing and a few other support services. And I'm wondering, I mean, right now you're just trying to get the primary care piece up and running, which I totally appreciate. Just wondering maybe if there's a long run to kind of consider the impact of all those supports on people's health, somehow make a case, just as like an aside, that in order to preserve people's health, you need to have housing and a job and other things. So I don't know if you have consumer-run peer support groups or wellness recovery action planning or anything else that helps. So yeah, so that kind of fits in.
Yes.
So you can paint that picture kind of as a sideline, even though this project's really about core primary care, I encourage you to do that.
We're in process of doing
yes.
that, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Does the primary care provider need to be a physician?
No.
No, and I know other projects that have started with nurse practitioners, and we're thinking at this point, maybe transitioning to a nurse practitioner. I think as long as the nurse practitioner feels comfortable with complex patients that have diabetes and hyperlipidemia and obesity and hypertension and those kinds of things, I think that's fine.
Any other questions?
Did you say how much the grant was?
I'm sorry?
How much the foundation grant was?
It was $1.5 million for 3 years.
And you funded everything?
No.
Yeah, so like
there's a lot of match funding that comes from the mental health center too.
Okay, and then it covers the different salary.
It primarily covers salary. It covered equipment redesign of some of our rooms and some consumables going forward. But it's mostly just salary support.
Yeah.
I
sound like
a
meek.
No, Sarah's not making that much money. But you can contrast that with our SAMHSA-funded grant, which is a 4-year grant, which is $2 million. And also, you know, primarily covers salary support, but also covers a lot of these other incidental things that go in. But there's a lot of matching that the Mental Health Center also provides in terms of in-kind contributions, which means for free.
Right.
I don't know if I missed this. How often are you co-located in the clinic? Or does it depend on the scheduling and availability of clients?
Sarah's available 4 days a week. and our other primary care grant is 5 days a week.
Anyone else? Well, thank you. Oh, go ahead.
So I work in a community hospital, and I just kind of clarify the target population. You're targeting those clients or consumers with Medicaid, not a primary care provider already, or just having issues with committing to a primary care physician and being.
We were primarily targeting folks who consider the mental health center their medical home already. So
okay.
They're already coming to see us quite a bit, and they may or may not have primary care relationships. If they don't, then this, you know, folks that had Medicaid were able to be referred to this project if they wanted to. If they had good existing primary care relationships, keep doing that. And then our other grant is focused on indigent folks.
Okay.
We know that, this is probably for Sarah, but we know that psychotropic medications have a huge impact on people's health. And I'm wondering if you have had to negotiate much with people's psychiatrists on how that's worked.
Well, the environment where we are used to be the quiet of our area where we're at. And so we talk about it sometimes, like, you know, the relative benefits and risks, and I just work to their judgment on that. But we do talk about these things that are happening, how much of that might be attributable to medication versus other lifestyle things, depends on the patient and what their needs are, and then you know, we try to address to either medication on lifestyle, those other things. The providers in the UC are very aware of those issues. So do I go and say, you really have to take this person off this medicine because of their cholesterol? It just kind of doesn't happen that way, and they're very approachable, and if I do have concerns, they'll say, yeah, I know that you need this medication, but this is why we're still doing this, and you know, here's what the option would be. So that's really, really nice.
That's great.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you all for your attention today.